The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
A lot breaking right now. Hi, at Dawn Stensland. Follow me on X. Coming up in half an hour, Ellie Hopper, nationally recognized expert in human trafficking. And she's the president of a very important nonprofit that she co-founded to battle, to combat exploitation through her research, education, through advocacy. It's a group called GARD, G-U-A-R-D, Guard Against Trafficking. That's her nonprofit. She testified on Capitol Hill. She will be here to update us on what can only be described as something very disturbing that happened in this nation. When we think of, you know, the voices of freedom, what really is the sound of freedom or lack thereof in the last administration, hundreds of thousands of young people, children being trafficked in this country when they came in here. And for those who were given, among other things, a hotline number, 65,000 calls to that number, calls for help. And those calls went unanswered by the previous administration. You want to say it's a sin, it's a crime. It's a crime that this is underreported. This should be a lead story across America. And it's bias by omission. As people across the country, right here in our area, they come out and they protest against ICE officers. Where are they protesting for answers with children and young people being trafficked? This is human trafficking, sex trafficking, human slavery. It's sickening. And the fact that young children were calling a hotline as they were being dragged across the border, being trafficked, called the hotline, a call for help, and that went unanswered, it's sickening. So guess what? Ellie Hopper answers the call. This Trump administration answered the call, is trying to find more of these kids, and some of them have been found thanks to Donald J. Trump, our great president, and this great administration. So you'll hear from her. Want to get to that. What's happening right now in a Philadelphia court, in a courtroom here in Philadelphia, it's a federal case, and that's significant that it had to be federal. But this is the confessed cop killer who took from us a bright light in this world. This was Corporal James O'Connor IV, husband, father, good cop, one of the good guys. And he was gunned down by a cold-blooded killer, a gangbanger, a scumbag who should have been off the streets. But we have D.A. Krasner to thank for the fact, even though Krasner denies this, Krasner and his crew kept this cop killer on the streets to gun down Corporal James O'Connor IV. Whose widow grieves. Many of you know Terry O'Connor. So she and many, many others in a courtroom today, as we now hear 26-year-old Hassan Elliott's fate. This guy, he already pleaded guilty earlier this year to murder, racketeering charges in this federal court, admits to a series of murders. Yeah. So this was just another murder, but this one was Corporal James O'Connor, Jimmy O'Connor. So this guy, he was a gangbanger, Frankfurt-based drug gang known as SG 1700. And so these officers, including Corporal O'Connor, they were there to serve a warrant to take this, by all accounts, career criminal and killer off of our streets. And that's when this guy opened fire and he took the life of a bright light in this world. You know, and I hope all the sites, all the media, isn't People Magazine, all the media, they're out there reporting on the Florida case that we did, a traffic stop that we reported on earlier in Kale and Company. I hope all the same sites and all the news organizations that are putting out the word of some defiant 22-year-old punk who refuses, who rolls up his window that's a darkened window, refuses a Florida cop, and all that has gone viral. And all the social media sites claiming police violence. I hope they cover what happens today in this court as far as a man murdered, police veteran, a hero murdered. Mm-hmm. gunned down in the streets of Philadelphia, you know?
I do, Dan? I do have audio from Terry where she talks about how her and Sergeant met. I don't know if that's something you want to do here in the lead, but maybe at some point during the show we could play that back. Or if you want it now, I do have it ready for you, Dawn.
Yeah, let's hear.
You want to hear a little bit of Terry O'Connor?
Thank you.
Yeah. Jimmy was, you know, me and Jimmy were together for 27 years.
High school sweethearts.
You know, we started our family very young. People thought we were crazy. And, you know, it's just something that worked out for us. And, you know, thank God we did what we did when we did. And, you know, we spent pretty much from, I think I met him the end of my junior year. And we went, you know, from there. We married 2 years later and had our son and daughter. And, you know, we had no idea what we were doing in life, but we figured it out. And, you know, throughout the years, we always knew he wanted to be a police officer and follow in his father's footsteps. And, you know, he became a cop. It was, you know, his favorite thing to do. It's all he wanted. And he went on from being a cop in the district to making corporal and being moved around a few times. And then, you know, his dream job was SWAT. And he was in a SWAT unit as a corporal for about 15 years. But, you know, great dad, great husband. We were 1 month shy of our 25th wedding anniversary when everything happened. God. And, yeah, we just, you know, we feel like, you know, everybody puts in a lot of time and effort in these relationships with raising children and struggles and battles to, you know, get through all those years with the kids and figuring everything out. And, you know, we were there and, you know, it was all stolen away from me, you know, just like that.
Just like that. It was March 13th, 2020. And he was shot. This happened 6:09 a.m., just taking you back. So at the time, we were on the air. We were live on the air. And at the time, that's when Zioli was in the space of the morning news. So if you think about my morning news, at that time, I came on at 5:30, did a newscast. But we all came on together at 6. And we were getting texted and we were getting word as we came on the air that an officer had been shot as he and others were serving this homicide warrant in the Frankfurt section of Philadelphia. And Corporal O'Connor was shot while trying to enter a second floor room of a residence there, 1600 block of Bridge Street. I'm just taking you back for a moment as this scumbag shoots through the wall and shoots at him to kill him. And he was later pronounced dead at Temple University Hospital. Just really makes you sick. But I do remember that morning, and we were thinking about it. March 13th, 2020. And I know Dom Giordano, you heard Dom interviewing O'Connor's widow, Terry, and Zioli. It touched us that morning because it was devastating because we were getting the word. And it was a breaking news story. And so now today is the day this piece of scum gets, you know, sentenced 55 to 75 years. And many had said the guy should have gotten the death penalty. But at the time, I'm just going to take you back one more thing before we move on. And that is that there were many who blamed Larry Krasner, the DA, for not getting this guy off the streets sooner with lax policies. And then U.S. Attorney William McSwain, that's how we ended up in federal court here. McSwain pushing for this in a federal case because at least in the federal system, if you're sentenced to 55 years, you serve 55. You know, there's no gain time or this or that. So that's where this went with McSwain at the time. Again, Krasner denies that and says, no, it's not his fault. But many in the community have said his lax policies lead to a dangerous situation for all of us. Whether it's in this case an officer trying to serve a warrant, or for the public at large. So we have that going on. So please, if you would, just say personally a prayer for Terry this morning. You just heard her voice with talking to Dom at that time. But, you know, just saying a prayer for her, for his son and daughter who now, you know, the daughter, we told you earlier, serves in the Navy. Son serves as a Philadelphia police officer. Great family. And we had talked about it on Sunday, and that was in the afternoon after the, you know, Nick Hale and Greg Stocker and many of you were riding in the Families Behind the Badge, Children's Foundation, Bike-A-Thon, which is a nonprofit. Every dime, every penny, every dollar goes to help families like this one as they recover from this and financially and that sort of thing. And that's really why so many of you ride. That's why Nick and Greg and you know, Mark O'Connor started this incredible nonprofit. So just to weave that in, we were talking about it Sunday afternoon, and Maureen Faulkner was there talking about it and just saying, oh, this is a rough week for Terry. I just want to bring that home for you. If we can, Dan, is there anything just to close that off? Can we move on, or do you?
Yeah, I implore our listeners, go to the Odyssey or iHeartRadio podcasts and take a listen back, because she really does delve into her son being a police officer, daughter being in the Navy, and she tells a heart-wrenching story about the final moments she got to spend with James. I do have that queued up if you want that, Dawn, or listeners can go check that out on the podcast feed.
So let's you know, listen to that, think about them in prayer.
It was my birthday, it was March 12th, and I saw him, you know, my school that I worked at closed the next day for COVID because we didn't know what was going to happen. We said, let's take a Friday and see what happens. And, you know, so I said to Jimmy, like, hey, like, I'm closed tomorrow. We went out. He said, well, let's go get Coronas for dinner. So we had, you know, a drink at dinner. He came home, went to bed, and, you know, and something happened. He needed a computer at work that night. And I offered to bring it. And I really didn't think he would ask me to bring it because he worked on the side. He did so many other jobs on the side to like keep himself busy. It's just who he was and support us and the family. And he was doing a real estate transaction and he needed his laptop and it was raining. But he said, no, don't worry about it. And then he said, actually, can you bring it? And I did. And I drove over to SWAT, which wasn't far from my house. And I never did that. I could like never, especially on a Thursday night at 11 o'clock. And I did. I just pulled into the lot and he was waiting for me and talked to him for a second. And he, you know, just kissed me, said, happy birthday. I love you. And I'll see you in the morning. And then about 7 hours later, I got that phone call and everything changed. And, you know, and then with COVID on top of it, people have definitely dealt with the situation prior and unfortunately after me. But what I had to go through with COVID was definitely a little more tricky, trying to wait out a funeral because we didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, we waited 2 months and it just got progressively worse. And so we decided to have the funeral and I was, you know, told I was allowed to have 10 people in the church. My viewing was spread out from Monday to Friday that week.
So you can listen to the rest of that. Thank you for that, Dan, to think about the family and think about, if you haven't already, donating to Families Behind the Badge Children's Foundation, because she's one of the families behind the badge who receives and can receive help and families like this just to help them get through and with funeral costs and all of that. So just to bring that home and thank you for your love, for your support. Is, you know, what a rough day in court for this family and the greater, you know, law enforcement family as well, as you think about what we were talking about fairly recently with Officer Mark Dial, you know, facing a court and getting that exoneration and so on. You think about just families under fire, literally and figuratively. So we're thinking about you, Terry, and for your kids, too, now serving in the military and serving us to keep us safe in Philadelphia. I will move on. We'll take a quick break, but I want to get into a couple of unreported stories. And one of them is this real bombshell. President Trump talked about it yesterday while we were live, and we took a little teeny bit of it. And it's not getting the coverage it deserves, I feel. And what I mean by that is this was a report that was actually, I mean, technically it was released on the 17th, but it wasn't really made public. We didn't know about it till the 18th. For most of us, it was a very hectic weekend and it's a summer weekend. But this was Tulsi Gabbard as, you know, as the director of, you know, national intelligence. And think about that community. And think about the fact, and we're going to take you all the way back to President Trump, his first administration. And I remember, and I've told you this, friends of mine who worked for President Trump or were very involved in his first administration. And they would say to me, Dawn, you know, he's a rookie at this. He's never been a politician. If he was a newbie, if you will. And I think that in so many ways, what happened was that he trusted, I mean, you never think in any job. I just want you to imagine this. You take a new job, whatever that is, whether it's a political job, you're elected, or whether it's just in the private sector. Just imagine you find out, you get tangible evidence that was covered up for years, and you find out that that person was not just spreading really vile rumors about you, but basically planting booby traps and IEDs, if you will, to just explode or take down any success that you might have and try to chip away or destroy any credibility that you would have. I mean, that's crazy stuff. I know it happened. Believe me, my career, you know, as a television news anchor and reporter, I can tell you, it happens. People do that kind of thing. But man, to think about it happening to a duly elected president of the United States of America, and then who's being accused of this at the highest level, that it's treasonous. It's a damning report, well over 100 pages. I've been going through it, and it's heavily redacted. It's cumbersome. So right around the corner, I want to take a look at this because I want to give you some factoids, if you will, tangible nuggets of evidence that they're uncovering, what's being revealed here, and what are people in that community, if you will, saying about it. This is significant. This is not some just a political bogus blowing smoke. This is significant, and we need to keep this front and center. We'll also celebrate and talk about, once again, you know, being buried, the financial, the economic news that's happening. Wow, this is big stuff. Where's it being reported? Unbelievable. Hey, Dawn Stensland here, Dan Borowski, Jimmy Kelly. We're in the house. We're here for you. We want to give you all the information and take you beyond the headlines. 855-839-1210. Stay right there. You don't want to miss a moment. So here's the deal with what's going on. And we're all wading through this big report, as I say, biggity big, that I think is quite significant and has legs. But I want you to hear, and this has to do with the allegation that former President Obama is saying is a distraction, is denying this, but is being accused by federal officials right now, under the Trump administration, yes, and by President Trump himself, of treasonous activities. But here's former federal prosecutor who Dan Borowski is trying to get, you know, to book tomorrow to speak to live more in detail. But here's Brett Tolman, and he's talking about what he thinks happen. Listen in here.
I think about the fact that in our lifetime, John, there's only been one president who didn't leave Washington, D.C. after they were done serving their 8 years, and that was President Obama. He stayed there, and then his people were ready, and they put Joe Biden in knowing that they could accomplish what they wanted, which was to keep quiet some of the things that they had done while in power. When Joe Biden came in, it was easy to see that they put in Obama's people into key positions in order to continue the ability to cover what Obama had done. I think that's now we are much more aware. I think President Trump came in, you know, a bit naive the first term, just wanting to make America better than it had been. I think he came in very differently this time around. And this referral is serious, and the Department of Justice is going to have to pick now who among them is going to lead the investigation and the prosecution of those that were involved in this conspiracy.
So this is significant. This is not going away. And by the way, Brett Tolman joining us coming up at 11:15. That's the breaking news by Dan Borowski. Thank you. Great job to Dan for booking him. And so we'll get into it with President Trump making the claim yesterday that based on this huge report that has been released, saying that even former President Barack Obama was complicit, was a ringleader of so-called Russiagate and should be investigated. So the push for transparency begins. Speaking of transparency, right around the corner, you're going to hear from a very special lady who is pushing to protect people, especially children, from being human trafficked, child trafficking, really battling against all of this sick stuff that's happening in our country. She testified on Capitol Hill what she can update us on as far as this movement to discover missing children, missing individuals being trafficked as we speak. It's unbelievable. Wait till you hear her story. So Ellie Hopper, I'm honored to have her join me right around the corner. Stay right there.
So you're telling this committee that the Biden administration, while they were letting all of these unaccompanied minors into the country, and as we've talked about today, they weren't keeping track of them, they issued these kids a hotline that they could call if they had trouble with the sponsor family that they were put with? And you're saying that 65,000 calls to this hotline designated to protect these kids went unanswered? Is that what you're telling this committee?
Yes, sir. One case where a child's call was reporting that grown men were coming into his room at night and they were touching him. Nothing happened with that call. That call went unanswered until this administration took office, went through those 65,000 calls, made follow-ups, conducted a welfare check, and now that child has been rescued and that sponsor has been arrested.
And you are listening to the voice of a woman who has unwavering determination to bring justice to the voiceless. You were just listening to the testimony before a congressional committee. Ellie Hopper was testifying. She's a nationally recognized expert in human trafficking and the president of a very important nonprofit that she co-founded to help battle this kind of exploitation. And she does this through innovative research, education, advocacy, and she is the president of Guard Against Trafficking. My honor to welcome in Ellie Hopper. Thank you so much for being here today, Ellie, and thank you so much for your important work.
Thank you so much, Dawn, for having me and for prioritizing this issue. It's extremely important, not just because of the work we do with the nonprofit, but because the public needs to know what is going on.
And that's just it. When the Sound of Freedom, when that movie a couple years ago came out, and many of us here had talked about it, and there were even people who went to the movie multiple times donating to Sound of Freedom and praying. Even people would gather in prayer before that to pray for the young people, children being human trafficked in this country. And when I saw this report, when I saw your testimony, Ellie Hopper, I just couldn't help but think this is a real life Sound of Freedom that's happening right now in real time. And so can you react to that and as well tell us what is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So Sound of Freedom did what it needed to do. It woke people up to the horrifying realities of human trafficking. Now, the only thing it didn't do was make the connection that there are cases of that happening every day in the United States. So when I would approach people about the Sound of Freedom and those that have watched it and were horrified by what they saw, I said, you know, that's happening right here in our country. That's happening in our communities. And it was exacerbated by the open borders, but it existed before the borders were open. Human trafficking has been a problem for a very long time. It's modern day slavery. Most people think about sex trafficking as the most common form, but they don't look at the labor trafficking aspect. They don't look at the fact that men and boys are also enlisted for sex trafficking and labor trafficking. And so it really is an issue that needs to be addressed. People need to be aware. There are American children that are kidnapped, that are groomed, that are recruited for sex trafficking. It's not just, you know, illegal immigrants crossing the border that are at risk for it. It is American children as well. And so parents need to be aware. Communities need to be aware. Law enforcement needs to be aware. And we need to come together as a nation and understand what we're up against and how we can push back and combat this horrific reality.
And so with this, as far as, because we have heard for quite some time the numbers that there are potentially that there were hundreds of thousands of, in particular, young people, children brought into this country illegally to be trafficked. And then you, to your testimony, that 65 of them, apparently 65,000, called this hotline. So how many have been found? Is there a follow-up? How are they doing? Where are they? And then what about the others? What about apparently more, you know, about a quarter million others that are they still missing?
Yeah, those are all great questions. So to take a step back, back in November or back in July of last year, my business partner, Dr. Jared Sadowski, testified in front of a Senate roundtable. And it was Senator Grassley that had called the hearing together. And he sat next to DCF Director Siobhan Harris. And what they were testifying to was, again, the open borders, the children, the unaccompanied children that were coming through. But what was relayed early on was that DCF Director of Florida was requesting the information of where these children were sent so that Florida could do welfare checks because they were concerned about the well-being of the children that were sent to their state. They were stonewalled from receiving that information. It was not released to them. No meaningful welfare checks could be done by the state in which these children were sent. So that was relayed last year in July. Then in November, I testify in front of Congress, and we're talking about the unaccompanied children program again. My business partner and I have been to the border. We've seen unaccompanied children. We've seen the children with scraps of paper in their hands with the name and number of their sponsor. We have spoken to incarcerated cartel members that knew that the sponsor vetting was near non-existent and no meaningful background checks were done. And so they knew that they could hand these children the name and number of their sponsor and direct the flow of children where the cartel members and where the bad actors wanted them to go and where they could work to pay off their debt that they owed. And so they used taxpayer dollars to do it. They knew that these children would be sent without meaningful background checks on their sponsors, and they knew that they could direct where those children would go and there would be no meaningful follow-up. What was done on paper, what was done for policy, was establishing a hotline for children, you know, one of the many safeguards that on paper sounded good. But when these policies don't actually result in working the way that they were intended to, like this hotline, you end up with 65,000 unanswered calls and one person manning the hotline. And that wasn't even acknowledged or realized until the Trump administration took office and they did a massive review of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, specifically the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program, and they found that 65,000 calls were unanswered. That wouldn't have come to light if they hadn't done that due diligence. And not only that, they went through each and every call. It took a long time to go through all those calls, and those calls were made over the span of 4 years, which is disheartening. But they went through each and every call, and like the story that I highlighted in my congressional testimony, there was a child that had said they were being touched by men coming into his room at night. And so the Trump administration had acted on that call and was able to rescue the child and arrest the sponsor.
What you're describing, Allie, is they're listening to basically voicemails.
Mm-hmm.
And so what about these children? So the welfare checks, have they done those welfare checks? Have they, you know, rescued some of these kids? You know, where are we right now? I mean, now the kids, so let's say you have an 8-year-old, then they're now 12 years old, and whatever's been going on has been going on sometimes for a few years.
Yeah. So Congressman Higgins, during the hearing, said that 35,000 children have been rescued and found, and they are questioning the children to find out what happened. You know, find out what circumstances they were exposed to. So his team is doing the due diligence necessary, and, you know, I fully support his efforts. We fully support his efforts in that. And there are other congressmen and women and federal representatives and lawmakers that are supporting those efforts. But really, it's going to be a challenge. It's tough to find over 300,000 kids that went unaccounted for. It's absolutely unacceptable. And the federal partners and agencies like HSI are tasked with looking for and finding these children that are unaccounted for. But it was a problem that was created, and it was completely unnecessary. Another thing that I mentioned in the hearing was that when it's harder to adopt a dog from a shelter because you have to provide income verification, ID verification, you have to, sometimes there's a home study. None of that was required to sponsor a child. So it was harder to adopt a dog from a shelter than it was to sponsor a child.
Oh my God. And so, you know, there are those experts, and you're among them, you know, talking about this. Obviously, there are multiple things. You know, you referred to Eli Crane. So in other words, there are some who are pushing for new and stricter laws. But how do you, first of all, crack open this pipeline? They're saying that it's basically a pipeline. Then we're, you know, reading about this at homeland.gov. They have homeland.house.gov, all the raw data there, saying that basically there were taxpayer-funded NGOs, and at the end of the day, we're basically facilitating human trafficking. How in the world could this happen?
So when HHS, Health and Human Services, outsourced the responsibility to NGOs, that became a very complicated process to oversee and actually, so not only get oversight over, but accountability. Because on paper, you know, one person would be responsible, but they would outsource that responsibility, and it becomes really hard to track who remains responsible. You have multiple agencies pointing fingers at each other. And so when you have these contracts, where it comes down to is what is in the contract? What did these partners say that they would do to get these grant dollars in these contracts? And did they deliver on them? And many of these contracts were never delivered upon, not in the way that they promised. And they were given all of the money, taxpayer dollars. And many of these nonprofits, not all of them, but many of these nonprofits increased their salaries, their staff salaries. When you see surge bonuses of some of these executives and you see people doubling and tripling their salary, and that's not through donation, that's through taxpayer dollars and grant funding, that's absolutely unacceptable. But at the end of the day, when these nonprofits can't fulfill their promise, it's just a, you know, a contract breach. They can't get held accountable other than, you know, not being able to receive another contract. But really, there needs to be accountability. There needs to be accountability from the people issuing the contract, because at the end of the day, it's their responsibility. They're the ones giving out the money to these partners. And even if they said it was up to the NGOs to go into the backgrounds of the sponsors, they don't have the technology. They don't have the capability. You can't look into the background of individuals without access to those databases and technology. Nonprofits wouldn't have access in the way law enforcement does, in the way that these federal agencies do. So to even expect that that could be outsourced is absolutely just mind blowing.
And one of the things that came out of this was that it was an estimated $6 billion during the Biden-Harris administration, $6 billion, these are federal tax dollars, and then they were through the grant program from the Department of Homeland Security, HHS, and others, and so they were funding all of this money. What about, and I know that it's not just children, but that's where I'm focusing today. So as far as the unaccompanied children, they call them the UACs, the unaccompanied alien children, those programs, as of this moment, when you look at the 300,000 children, how many of them are accounted for?
So it's very hard to get a number on that, but the number that we last heard was the one that Congressman Higgins gave of 35,000 that were accounted for.
And so is that, because I know for, I'll just give you an example of coverage. So there was a news story, I'm broadcasting from, you know, live from Philadelphia, Allie, and there was a story about ICE moving in and they took some people in custody at a car wash. And then later, you know, we had followed up and we were told that, in fact, those individuals were not arrested. They were being young men being, quote unquote, human trafficked for the issue of slave labor. And so these things are not followed up on. Even for news people, you know, it's hard to get the information. The headlines claim, oh, these are hardworking people and they did nothing wrong. Well, yeah, they did nothing wrong, but they were being trafficked. You know, ICE was like basically rescuing them. It's just one of the many things that I see where it's not properly being reported upon for a multitude of reasons. But one of the reasons is we're just not getting the information as far as who are these individuals. You know, for example, in California, what was that, a week and a half ago, when in California we found out at that pot farm, there were a bunch of kids that were here illegally. I mean, are those kinds of situations, those kids then, everybody has to then cross-check and find out how did those kids end up as like free slave labor, basically, or allegedly, at a farm in California? Is that what's happening now?
That's what the media, you hit it right on the head. The media is not presenting the facts. They're presenting, most of the media is presenting a narrative. They are picking the narrative they want to choose. They want to portray ICE in a negative light. They're not portraying what the actual intent is of ICE, is the focus, not the sole focus, but the primary focus is to remove the bad actors, the criminals, from this country. And that's their primary focus as of right now. But they aren't, the media is not reporting that. They're trying to, like the case in California, they're trying to spin a narrative and not highlight the fact that there were children there working on a pot farm. And it doesn't matter what the child labor laws are in each state. Under the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program, these children are not allowed to work. So point blank, period. But when you have a party that cannot admit when something is not handled right, and they gloss over that fact, and then they gaslight the American public by saying, oh, ICE raided a pregnant woman's home, but leaving out the fact that they were going after a known cartel member with a rap sheet that, you know, could fill a room, they leave that part out. So it's just the American people need to realize that there are certain media personalities like yourself that are reporting on what is actually going on. They're not spinning a narrative. They're presenting the facts, educating the community, educating the public, and making people aware of really what is going on the streets.
I know you have to go soon. I hope we can continue the conversation. Other than giving out, you know, guardagainsttrafficking.org, I want everybody to go there, educate, get more educated. Please donate right at the top of the screen, donate. Because we have a really involved group, I'll tell you, Allie, who do donate. We just had a fundraiser for, you know, backing families, you know, who are affected by law enforcement, you know, being shot on the job and that sort of thing, disabled. So please donate. But how can people follow you, support what you're doing? And I just want to point out, Allie, this is not political for you. You've been doing this, like you said, you've been doing this for a long time.
Absolutely. So we do have social media accounts. We have Facebook, X, Instagram. You can follow all of the major social media accounts. So I think that they are listed on the website. But you can also follow me and my business partner, Dr. Sadolsky. On social media, we do post a lot as well, and we're just trying to continue to educate the community. We are providing training to law enforcement. We're providing training to lawmakers. We're providing training, education to communities. And really, it's the donations that are the lifeblood of this organization, because what we're training people on is what we see firsthand. We're not reading articles and watching movies to get material to train people on. We're seeing it firsthand by speaking to incarcerated cartel members, by speaking to survivors and overcomers, and actually getting intelligence in real time that can help guide communities to protect themselves and establish strategies to be able to move the needle and be able to combat this crime.
Allie Hopper, guardagainsttrafficking.org. I hope you come back. I hope we continue the conversation. And most of all, thank you for doing this important mission. Really appreciate you, Allie.
Well, thank you so much, Dawn. I appreciate you. And thank you for reporting on this.
100%. GuardAgainstTrafficking.org. And you can go through here. They have all kinds of news and updates, education, and you can learn about the Committee on Homeland Security. And that's what she had testified to. But also human traffickers, understanding their psychology. They even have, you can click on it, where they go through illegal migrants, what happens during that journey to the United States. That goes underreported, right? What happens to somebody? Can you even imagine making that journey? And oftentimes it's a journey filled with, you know, starvation, with sex assault, and all kinds of violent assault. So this is not a pretty picture, but it's the reality. So we really appreciate GuardAgainstTrafficking.org, and absolutely will be following up on this important work. Thanks for being here, for listening in, for watching on YouTube, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. I'm Dawn Stensland. We will be right back.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.